Good morning. I'd like to call the Customer and Operations Committee to order. Do we have?
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. We have the agenda before us. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
And is there a second? Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Nays. Thank you. Before us are the minutes for the June 9th Customer Service and Operations meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Thank you, Mr. Giancola. Second. Mr. Dyke, all those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you very much. Today we have before us an information item on our agenda for bus stop accessibility. We have asked the staff to come back to us to look at strategies on how to improve inaccessible bus stops on a priority basis, recognizing that accessible bus stops are an opportunity to decrease the dependence on Metro Access service, as well as it's safer for all of our customers. Staff has been also going to look at the assistance of our jurisdictions adopting a regional approach to the accessible bus stops that includes pathways from those stops. And we all know that this is a major issue, I think, jurisdictionally. And now I'm going to ask Mr. Kent, Assistant General Manager of Access Services, to give us the presentation, and we will have discussion on the information item. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mrs. Hudgens, and good morning to board members. As I think that introduction really cues this up very well, we're talking about accessible bus stops this morning because it is a regional issue, and it has a need, really, for a holistic approach to making bus stops accessible. We do have 19,000 of them in the region, and they are not just the ones that are served by Metrobus, but also by the various jurisdictional bus services. And the real issue is that Metro Access Paratransit service can be granted to customers on the basis of not being able to have an accessible bus stop in their vicinity when they want to travel. So the point of our presentation this morning is really just kind of give you an order of magnitude of the issue, kind of highlight some of the efforts that have been made so far, and to really make sure that we've defined the issue properly, what's needed, and then talk about next steps. So at the beginning, of course, we draw the line to Metro Access, that again, that really is where the cost consequences of an inaccessible bus stop are seen. There have been some grant funds that have been applied to the improvement of regional bus stops through New Freedom. One of those is being managed by Metro currently on the Office of Bus Planning, and that's well underway. And these efforts have so far all been focused on making a bus stop accessible according to the existing ADA standard, which we have, I believe, on the next slide. These are the three criteria of making a bus stop accessible under the ADA, that there needs to be a firm landing surface, a 5x8 surface, and that it needs to be able to connect to the curb. The inventory that Metro has presently on the relative accessibility of stops is limited to the ones that are served by Metro Bus. So one of the things you're going to hear me say this morning is that we have some data, but we need more data. We need to keep it up to date, and it does need to include all the stops that are served by the various jurisdictional bus services as well as Metro Bus. So the next slide gives a relative picture an order of magnitude of the number of inaccessible bus stops that are in the region. And I want to make sure that I'm very clear on the source of this data and the purpose of why we're showing it to you this morning. The Accessibility Advisory Committee has invited staff from each of the jurisdictions to come visit them and talk about this issue and the relative progress that has been made. The starting point for some of the data was a bus stop inventory that was compiled in 2006. So clearly between then and now, that's an opportunity for a lot of work to be done. the progress has varied from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And I can give one example, that the number for Montgomery County that we have up here at 3,400 was what we had been provided previously, but Montgomery has made some really concerted efforts to improve this number. It may be down as low as 800 now from the original number that we received. But the closure that we need on these numbers is to verify that those stops conform to a definition that really does the job. And as we go forward, we're going to talk about the fact that even though the ADA definition is a good start, for a bus stop to be functional for a person with a disability to use, it also has to have an accessible pathway and a connectivity from where they're really starting their trip. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. But I do want to indicate here that the purpose this morning is not to take away any credit for the work that has been done, but merely to highlight that it's an issue for all of us, and that if we all work together and share data, this is a good thing for us to continue to report out on and then revisit, because as stops are improved, that's an opportunity to take another look at paratransit eligibility for people whose accessibility situation has changed, even if their disability may not have. So our first recommendation is to look at that standard and to add a fourth criterion, which is the accessible pathway to the stop, as I mentioned. So we're defining that as a curb cut at the corner nearest the bus stop with a matching curb cut at least one adjacent corner. So again, you know, this reflects the entire mobility picture for the customer, what they would really need to be able to do if they're going to use that bus stop every day and be able to travel independently on the fixed route system. We are recommending that all the jurisdictions adopt this standard. And again, using Montgomery as an example, you know, we presented this information to the JCC twice before we came here this morning to really start to have a dialogue on this. And I'm told that in Montgomery that their standard has been extended to adopt something like this. So that's a very positive development. And again, we're wanting to see that in all of the jurisdictions. Our second recommendation is that really, if you look at how many stops need to be improved, if it's 10,000 out of 19,000, that's a pretty heavy lift. And it can be a very discouraging lift if we're saying that we, you know, success is only when we get to the 19,000. We can have quite a bit of an impact if we prioritize the improvements and do what we can in the near term, using things like the data we have from Metro Access, where we can give specific examples of people who got paratransit eligibility precisely because of the bus stop. And it's a great place to start. We're going to start leveraging our GIS data more effectively to draw more of that type of information out. But presently, we have 57 stops that we've identified that are in that category, and that is what we are going to start with. And we have been discussing those with the jurisdictions, and for board members, a specific detail about where those stops are and how many of them are in your package. But that is something that we've already started the dialogue on, and our recommendation is to actively pursue those prioritized stops and then to look further to see more of them that would be in that category that we could put on our list. Of course, there's an investment required. We are estimating that the minimum that would be needed to improve a bus stop is around $10,000. You know, the improvements are going to vary depending on the condition of the stop. You know, but to get those four criteria to apply to the stop, then that's what's going to drive the cost of the improvements. And again, we tried to improve all of them at once, very heavy lift. People, you know, obviously immediately look at that number and say, wow, you know, that's going to be really hard to achieve. But if we can prioritize them and fix the ones first that are going to have the most immediate impact, we can see some real savings. So, speaking of savings, the return on the investment, if we were to improve just the 57 stops, could be as much as $600,000 in paratransit cost avoidance, which should obviously be a very desirable result. So we talked just a little bit more about the ROI on this. You know, it's not just money. Bus stops that are accessible and properly maintained are safer. So when you make that accessibility improvement, you're also putting a safer and more functional bus stop out for all customers. That's a tremendous benefit and a good reason to do it right there. It also facilitates the strategic direction we've been taking for some time, which is to offer the disability community the most independent travel options, which, you know, if they have that ability to use bus and rail, then that's the most independent option, and we want to do everything that we can to support it. And in fact, because paratransit does cost so much, the savings in paratransit ridership more than pays for the investments that you'd need to make the bus stop improvements. So what we are also recommending as next steps is that we want this to be a regional discussion, and, you know, we certainly like to thank the board and the chairman for the recent letter that was sent to COG to kind of highlight the coordination issues we need to look at. Well, you know, bus stop accessibility is one element of that. So we'd like to continue that conversation with the Council of Governments and have all the stakeholders involved in that discussion. And again, integrate the accessibility inventory of bus stops beyond those that are served by Metrobus to include all of the jurisdictional bus services, and then to move on to that further prioritization of which stops are next on our list to improve. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kent. We'll open it for discussion. Mr. Giancola.
Yes, thank you for the report. Question on the 57 stops and the estimated, and I assume this is an upper level, $600,000 savings. I mean, how accurate is that? I mean, how did you determine that? Obviously, you picked 57 based on the number of people that use those stops and maybe the condition, I assume.
Yes, sir.
But then also, is that $600,000 the upper range, or was there a range of costs that you savings that you were estimating?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that, because I'm often
you're
asked
always glad that I ask you questions.
I am, because it gives me a chance to give a great answer. and the answer is, we know what these savings are because we know the average usage of Metro Access by our customers. We know our customers very well. We also know that we charge the jurisdictions $50 a trip. So it's an easy calculation, and we've been doing that every time that we propose an initiative to shift paratransit ridership. So it is the average usage. It's not really a range. It's kind of our estimate in the middle of typical paratransit usage by a customer.
You obviously don't know who's using it now, who could use it. So you're kind of projecting that someone will use a particular stop if it's improved, correct?
These 57 are associated yeah. with people who we already have
already
seen
know that live in those areas that are close by.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's the word I was looking for.
Yes, and that comes from our consultations with them during the eligibility process.
Qualifying, maybe.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Downs and Mr. Goldman.
Our interest, I think, as a transit authority is our bus stops, and while I appreciate the region's need to have accessible bus networks for all of the other 11 bus operators within the region, I think our obligation is to be able to geocode every single bus stop that Metro Bus stops at in this region. I don't think we're there yet. I think part of that geocoding has to be a visual inventory of what that site actually contains. And my guess is most of that data is already on Street View, so it's much easier to access. And with that, with a total actual condition inventory of all of the bus stops that Metrobus uses, we can then begin a total prioritization process, not just the first 57, but what the prioritization beyond the 57 looks like, the next 100, the next 200. Because if we have numbers like this, this is an epic journey that's going to last a decade or two to get to 100% accessible bus stops within the region. The second thing that I think that the board needs to clearly do is define what we believe the definition of an accessible metro bus stop is, what its characteristics are, what we think is fully defensible about accessibility, since we're also the accessibility service provider for the region, the primary service provider of access service, and ask formally to the TPB, the COG and the TPB, that this be a standard that the region itself adopts as part of its planning process and capital allocation of its highway funds as it improves or changes bus stops as a result of their highway program. If we're not clear about what we think an accessible bus stop is for us, everybody will still be developing their own definitions, and I think that it is absolutely critical that we soon agree as a board on what that definition is and the transmittal of that to the Council of Government and the TPB.
In response to that, I think what Christian has presented is the four standards he believes meet, staff believes meets the definition of an accessible stop. And if the board agrees, I'd suggest an action would be to recommend this to the board for adoption. I'd also like to say that I think we provide the paratransit for all bus lines, so it's not just Metro bus service. And that's why I think there's equal importance to looking at the bus stops served by the other bus lines, because ultimately it provides better transportation for people who are mobility impaired, independent transportation, and secondly, it reduces costs to the jurisdictions. So I think we should move ahead on this, and certainly as representatives of the jurisdictions here, I'd like to see the jurisdictions really pick this up. I agree with COG, they should certainly be a part of this, but this is something that we can do working with the jurisdictions directly.
Any other discussion on that one particular point, Mr. Rayquaza?
If I could just make a point to Mr. Downs' question, all of the bus stops that Metro uses are geocoded. We know where they are. We know which routes serve each stop. I was walking across the street last evening with one of our IT gurus and asked, what have you done for us lately? And he says, we're not far away from having a visual picture of every bus stop within our system. So you'll be able to pull up the bus stop, see what's in the area, see the condition of the stop itself, and certainly would guide us towards making improvements to meet the standards that we're talking about.
Because without that data, you can't actually begin to prioritize the entire 6,000 unaccessible bus stops in our immediate future.
And then we need to obviously upgrade or update the inventory as the improvements are made.
And I just want to, I think the item that we had before in which we asked the COG to come to the table, to me, is a continuation of the work that we've been doing at the COG, because there's been a lot of work that's done. And where we are is updating that work and coming back to make certain we're all on the same page as we go forward. So I think that, Mr. Goldman and then Mr. Downey and Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Thank you, Mr. Kent, for your report. It was very enlightening and eye-opening, and I appreciate as well your updating on the information from Montgomery County and your additional remarks. Obviously, when I first saw the slides over the weekend, it said to me I should look into this, and so I did consult with county staff, and I want to come back and just indicate for the record what I've learned from that, and that is that the inaccessible bus stops is a very important issue for the county, for the county government, and the county is moving aggressively to remedy the inaccessible bus stops, as your update evidences, and has made a $6 million commitment, to go back to our prior conversation with Chairman Downs, $6 million commitment in its six-year capital improvement program to address the needs for the accessible bus shops, and we're working collaboratively, as you know, with WMATA to cure this. So I imagine when you come back next year and give a similar report, you'll find that the Montgomery County number is a lot lower, and someone else will beat us out as one of the jurisdictions to take the lead. So I thank you for your enlightening report, and hope when we have this conversation next year, I'll have something better to report. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, couple of questions. Again, looking towards what it will take to get this implemented, which I strongly support. When a bus stop needs to be improved, who pays the cost and who executes the project, gets the approvals and all of them needed?
Well, that definitely depends on who owns the stop. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why we wanted to bring this forward. You know, just as as we've spoken about accessibility issues, even in just using the system, wherever Metro owns the property, we attend to it directly. So the issue here is that since most of them are not owned by the authority, that's why we wanted to make this more of a jurisdictional discussion.
But where we own it, it's
the jurisdictions have to.
Where we own it, we would do the work. If we want the policy of the curb cuts at the corners done, that would be included in the project. I assume we have to work with the road owner to do that.
Well, you know, some of the improvements are made in conjunction with street repairs, sidewalk, that sort of thing. So it's done differently. Sometimes it's different funds that are applied. Sometimes the work is done in conjunction with other improvements. But at the end of the day, it's the jurisdiction, Public Works, that would take this on.
And that's, I think, part of the point of Mr. Downs' comment, that if we have a plan, when a road is being rebuilt, that's the time to do this. Mm-hmm. But you need a plan to do that. Second point, when we reroute a bus, do we look at the availability of currently accessible bus stops or potentially accessible bus stops in conjunction with that route?
Well, I think that's all part of the program. When we do have to reroute or create a new route, we certainly are going to, you know, be working with the jurisdictions from the standpoint of accessibility to get people to the bus. I will add on the previous question is that with some grant money, we do make some of the improvements ourselves, work through the jurisdictions using their contractors or our contractors to make improvements, primarily through grant funds.
Where a stop is shared by various users, there's still someone who underlying responsibility. It might be us, it might be the jurisdiction. Then one last question, it's more a topical one. Who has responsibility for snow removal at the bus stops?
Jurisdictions, unless they're on Metro property.
Yeah.
And we do.
Jurisdictions, except what?
Unless they're on Metro property, which is primarily at rail stations.
Because I got a compliment yesterday from someone in our building who thanked Metro for getting the snow out of our bus stop. But I said, I took the compliment. I'm not sure we actually did the work.
I think over the years, the jurisdictions have done a better job of moving the snow away from the corners and near the bus stop so that people are, so that the ability to access a stop or to get out to the bus itself has improved to some extent.
I also want to thank you for this report. I think it's very useful. You started to answer my first question is how you decided on the priority 57 stops, and you said it has something to do with the number of Metro Access users in the vicinity. Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
I'd like to introduce our ADA policy and planning director, Chris Blake. He's been managing this project. I'd like to detail this for you.
Good afternoon. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. To answer your question, Ms. Porter, these initial 57 stops were identified by customers who have been granted Metro Access eligibility in part because of the inaccessibility to a 2-hour accessible fixed route services. And what they did in that functional assessment and interview, they identified a location that, if it were accessible, could potentially allow them to take fixed route service for at least some of their trips. So we have those, and as we identify those initial stops, as they get fixed or as we're updated that they'll be fixed, we then will follow up with the customers, see if they have the travel training they need, see if they have the support services they an understanding of using fixed route service, and then we're going to encourage and do our work to ensure that they use fixed route services at their choice, but for at least some of their trips.
Okay, so are these bus stops over which WMATA has control, or are they a mixture of WMATA and jurisdictions?
It's It's primarily in the jurisdictions, and I think that's what the point Mr. Sarles was making is that since paratransit eligibility is going to be triggered by an inaccessible bus stop under our control or jurisdictional control, they're all relevant to this issue.
So is the idea that we would transmit a list of these stops to the jurisdictions then?
Well, see, and we do. I think that the issue is we're trying to heighten the awareness of this region.
Okay.
And we actually transmit that information over shortly after we have the eligibility assessment, you know, mm-hmm. and we report it to the offices that do this work, but we're just simply trying to heighten the awareness on the issue and its magnitude regionally.
Okay. Well, I think bringing it to the board certainly heightens the awareness, and you could further heighten the awareness if you gave us sort of a list of the stops in our jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
That would
be
helpful.
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Nichols.
Thank you, and thank you for the report. I am completely in agreement that this dialogue should be elevated. It's much less a transportation issue than it is a quality of life issue. And it's an issue that should be discussed, as has been brought forward here, as a regional issue and a regional responsibility. It necessarily plays out in terms of costs and routes and fixes and things like that, but it really is a much more substantive discussion that needs that level of discussion regionally, as you said, to highlight it, to really examine ways that we can be much more effective in responding to a quality of life imperative. And it's one we can't solve here alone in as a transportation solution. The question around the 57 you've answered, but I do you have data on folks that might have transportation available to them if we can expand the program substantially in terms of the improvements to the routes? Because we know folks who have expressed their desire to and willingness and readiness to take advantage of that, but talk a bit about, if you have the data on it, folks who we don't really have in our system that are out of the quality of life mainstream right now that really could become more actively engaged in being able to use our facilities if we could expand this in a way that is cost-effective and can really reach people.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nichols. We totally agree with that point about it being a quality of life issue as well. We have some of the data, but what you are describing is the methodology that we're going to use to greatly expand our capture of that data, that it's going to be a mapping of where the Metro Access customers live and work presently against the, you know, overlaying the accessible and inaccessible bus stops around them to take a look at what travel would be possible, even for people whose eligibility isn't necessarily tied to this. You know, one of the things that's really a great incentive for people to take advantage of bus stops that we would improve, even if they have not been flagged by individuals yet, is the free ride program. That there are many conditionally eligible Metro Access customers who currently can use bus and rail for free. So if the bus stop is an impediment for them to be able to do that, then again, that's another reason why we want to open that door. So our methodology is going to be to start off with people who right now are using Metro Access and are, you know, presumably not able to use the fixed route services around them because the inaccessible bus stops will be overlaid over the paratransit ridership patterns. And that'll direct us as to where we could recommend the next set of improvements.
May I ask one follow-up question?
Yes.
It's more of a question, more of a comment than it is a question, and that is, in the context of necessarily we talk of it in terms of costs and fixes and things like that. I mean, that's how it translates out down here. But I think that there's an additional component of that quality of life that and cost and benefit that I would ask that we try to draw into this, I mean, there are citizens who can participate more effectively in our economy and in our communities, can contribute more. And that contribution has an economic gain to it as well. And that's not just our story to tell, but I think in collaborating with, I know you collaborate already with a lot of partners, but if we can begin to express the value capture and the contribution that we can add to our community by being able to do this, I think that that tells a more complete story about why it's imperative that we do this, and it might create more alignment of more interest to advocate for what must be done and the investment that's going to have to be made to get that return. Thank you.
Ms. Hines, Mr. Dyke.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. So could we go back to the slide that shows the need, I guess would be how I would characterize it, the bar chart by our so Mr. Kent, on this bar chart, how many of these are actually controlled by WMATA?
The information, because of the fact that it was given to us by the jurisdictions.
Is your mic on, Christian? It is. Okay, can you pull it closer? It's hard to hear you.
I'm sorry. Let's try this again. The information on the slide is a combination of ours and the region's bus stops.
Okay.
And again, it was reported to us through the meetings we've had with the AAC.
Gotcha. So I think if...
All of us.
You get to tell everybody.
What we have provided, yes, as Mr. Kent mentioned, this information, these estimates were based on conversations, no rough, but to help alleviate any concerns about the data, what we have is a Metro bus stop inventory with specific bus stops that Metro serve.
Now, right. I understand it's about who we serve, about who's stopping. What I just think we need to be clear among ourselves.
Ms. Hines, let me suggest, at the Metro rail stations, the stops are accessible.
Right.
We don't have any, Metro doesn't own any other stops within some of these jurisdictions. So these are all jurisdictional.
That was the answer I was actually looking for. So I appreciate that very much, which is why we're trying to have this regional conversation. So this is about stops we don't control. We, WMATA, does not control. The jurisdictions do. So that's important. One of the observations I would make, and you used the $10,000 figure for replacement, and I would say I've lived a different story on bus stop replacement in the last year and a half. And I think that it is very important that WMATA, in this conversation, help people understand that the cost of doing this is a range, and that $10,000 is probably the lowest cost if you don't have a pad and you need to put the pole in and you need to connect it and you got to do curb cuts. We're not even talking about a shelter necessarily at the $10,000 cost. We haven't talked about right-of-way acquisition. We haven't talked about a lot of the things that are necessary to make this work. So this is everything goes right. You control all the property, and you can tie it into some other project. So the only reason I'm making this point is as we're talking about this and raising regional awareness, we have the opportunity to educate that the price of this varies pretty dramatically depending on the number of patrons you're hoping to serve and all kinds of other things. So I would just ask that we have some sensitivity to that issue.
Sure. I just want to clarify that this is the incremental cost to take an existing bus stop and make it accessible. And it's not the same as building a basically a station for a streetcar in the future.
No, I'm saying
this is just the incremental cost of meeting those standards on a planning estimate basis.
Right. So, but even so, we would agree that it's not everyone is going to be deliverable at $10,000, and many will cost more.
Right, and we did say that, Ms. Hines, it is a minimum. And I think, you know, Mr. Sarles' point is exactly right, that that there is a way to make a bus stop minimally accessible so that people can use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is an expanded definition of other accessibility features you could add to it, and
sure.
those things could cause the cost mm-hmm. to be greater. We were trying to just simply make it functional, accessible, so that a person with a disability could access the fixture
right.
system physically.
I appreciate that, and of course, if you're doing curb cuts that don't exist, that's mm-hmm. that's different than I'm just working with the space I already control and I'm improving it. So that's just my... In our role as catalyst and convener, we have some obligation to help with that. And I think I'm very in favor of moving forward with a board-adopted definition. My staff tells me that's Arlington's definition already. It may be that lots of us in the region already have adopted the curb cut because we know it matters. So I would really encourage us to think about whether we can get that to the board in a fairly timely manner. I'm also interested in how we track this moving forward, because it is an intentionality on the part of the jurisdictions as our partners and how we think about it and talk about it in the future. So whether it's, you know, this is our baseline, this is where we're starting with this chart, and next year you come back to us and you say, here's what happened. But the part you mentioned, Christian, which is hopefully the result is we see an uptick in free rides on fixed route. If we can find a way to fold that into what we track so that there really is this feedback loop to the jurisdictions that, in fact, this is helping us manage the cost associated with Metro Access, I think that would be important. And the last thing I would say is, as I sit here with a sprained ankle today, I'm very aware of the fact that any of us in a moment can go from being able-bodied to not able-bodied, and that so this is not only about the people who qualify today for Metro Access, it's about all of us as we age and as we look for options other than driving as we age, and so it really is a big issue.
Thank you, Ms. Hines. I think you can be the compliance person. That's how we can all get there much faster if we all have that role. Mr. Dyke and then yeah. Mr. Bolton.
Mayor, you may want to be a co-chair on that, too, by the way. I'm sort of in my teachable moment mode right at the moment. I just want to, and I thought Mary might get to it, but I want us to focus on, one, what the GM said about us aggressively working with the jurisdictions, and this ties into the fact that when we get to our budget discussion, we're going to have a related issue that ties into the fact that this is a quality of life matter that we need to step up to, and it's a regional issue. And even, in fact, as we talk about our momentum plan and what our plan is going forward and how we can better serve the region as far as transportation, a part of that has to be providing the kind of quality of life that our citizens demand and deserve in this region. And we're going to have to make some tough decisions, but I think it's important that we recognize that they have to be made. We're talking about quality of life. We're talking about people being mobile. And so just kind of keep this in mind when we have our discussion later on. That's all I want to say at this point.
Mr. Belcher.
Thanks, Christian and staff, for this. On the slide that is tab 3, $1.2 million New Freedom grant is available. Did we receive the New Freedom grant? Question one.
Yeah, we have a New Freedom grant. Are there bus stops, Jim?
And livable community.
Okay, so... So what fiscal year did we receive a $1.2 million New Freedom grant?
It was in 2012.
All right, thanks.
In 2012?
All right. If the tab 3 says that it could, the grant must have said to improve 88 bus stops. Is that correct?
Jim, come up.
The grant specifically identified a funding opportunity. A subsequent review process and prioritization process came up with the number 88. That involved the Access Advisory Committee and bus stop coordinators around the region.
Okay, so if the grant says we we're going to fix 88 bus stops, notwithstanding Mary's good points about there could be various costs per stop. Prioritization process that Kristen gave us, we got 57 stops as a priority. Why don't we have 88 priority? If we have a grant to do 88, we got 57, why isn't it 88?
Well, it's actually two concurrent efforts. So we took the ones that we've identified that need to be improved, and we're pushing those forward. In the meantime, in consultation with Jim, Jim has the project and the funding tied to it, and we are sharing that data so that the priorities that we mentioned this morning are at the top of the list. But he also has others that he was working on before my team brought our priorities forward, so we're working on this together.
Yeah, there's some overlap in the two numbers.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, do I add the two together to get to the priorities, or do you, or what? Is it 57 plus 88 to get started on this initiative?
I actually haven't sorted them that way, so I can't answer. I think the overlap, there's certainly the 50, well, I don't know how many are non-Metro bus stops, but there's probably an overlap of 25 or 30. So we're talking about 100 as the target. The 88 are grant-funded. These are not necessarily funded. That is what we're, you know, raising the level of interest in and looking for that funding.
Could you guys get back to us and tell us what the starting point is on the priority bus stops? Is it 88, 57, or some other number?
Certainly. The 88 number is about Metrobus, and we'll correlate the two and provide you that number.
I guess the clarity is if we're asking for 57 as a priority and it gives us an offsetting cost of $600,000, where in the 88 does that number fit, and funding wise, who and where it occurs?
Right.
That's it. Mr. Nichols.
Thank you. Thanks. I just wanted to make another comment, and this is with respect to clarity as well. And I appreciate the comments that Ms. Hines made about what the real costs are. And Chairman Downs, in discussing the capital infrastructure program for our highways and our transit throughout the region, I mean, it really is a dialogue that belongs right there. And I think that it is important for us to define what we would and embrace what we consider to be an accessible bus stop. But for me, and perhaps not the right language, it almost feels like a usable bus stop is not necessarily an accessible bus stop, because it's a it could take $3 million in highway improvements to be able to avail it. Now, and that's not a criticism of the definition by any stretch, but it's this dialogue that we're having right now in terms of elevating it is critical. I know that the jurisdictions are aware of it. I don't think we want our dialogue to be one as though we're trying to pass a problem off or pass an issue off of cost. It's really simply working together to figure out what that solution is. I know that MDOT and in Maryland and Prince George's have heightened their examination of what some issues and strategies. We're doing it here. Other jurisdictions are doing it, but it's an imperative. And I like the approach to elevate it. And thank you for the dialogue this morning. And thank you, Kathy, and thank you for the presentation.
I was just going to just summarize that again. You know, we've touched on a lot of the nuances, but the reason why we brought this issue forward was because of the fact that there have been disparate efforts to look at it. It has not been a coordinated approach. You know, bus services was looking at it because they get feedback from bus users about where to make improvements. Access services came forward with our 57 because we have people that we know as individuals who got paratransit eligibility because of it. So that's where our number came from. The definitions of the stops, absolutely. There are a lot of different ways to talk about what would make something really accessible. But we have a very simple objective. We want people to be able to use the metro system effectively as opposed to having to depend on paratransit service. So what we tried to do is start very simple and small and say if we can achieve that by hopefully concentrating on the necessary improvements to a stop just to make it physically functional. And have a common definition that everyone can get behind so that when we do pull our data together, we are speaking on the same terms. And I think it's because we have been working on it separately, that's been hard to do. And then, of course, when we present data, you know, we don't want to tell you that something is solid if it's not. But this is just beginning step to say we've put out on the table what we have. We want to invite all the stakeholders in, and we want this to be a regional effort. And, you know, again, as General Manager Sarl said, one step that could be taken is the board could adopt the fourth criterion that we listed this morning and say that's the WMATA standard, and we on staff can take that and carry that forward with the regional discussions. Thank you.
Okay.
If I could just make a comment, once the bus stops are fixed, obviously they're serviced by buses. 10, 12 years ago, we celebrated making the bus fleet 100% accessible with lifts. Obviously, we've moved on with that with low floors. We're down to under 300 buses that require low floors. In our 14 budget, we have 85 buses that will be in service this summer to reduce that number. And the first of that order is actually sitting out front of the building for the next couple hours for you to view. Obviously, with the lift, it's our first bus from the North American bus industry. And those buses will be going into service not only on the transitway in Arlington and Alexandria, but also throughout the rest of the service. And we look forward to those, again, assisting persons with disabilities to board our buses with much more reliability. So it's sitting out front. We'd be happy to have people take a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I thank you for the discussion. It's a very important piece that we spent quite a lot of time, but I think it's a very important item, and I think the direction that we're moving in is important. I would ask that, having had a fluid discussion, that as our agenda item for the futures note, that we come back for adoption of a standard, if that is no, there are no objections from anyone in the committee at this time. And having that as an action, that we, in moving forward with the jurisdictions, I think it would be good to share as much as possible with the board members as to jurisdictionally just where we all are, because I think there is a lot of communication. It may not be 100% coordination, and it does give us a better understanding of where we are with this issue and helps, I think, begin the work that we want to do on the Council of Governments. There is a lot of discussion. There's a lot of really good work, but the magnitude of this issue is a very, very large one, and I think we want to know that we're making that progress as a priority here.
One of the things that would also be helpful in that process is if we adopt that fourth element of the definition, what is the impact on the accessible numbers? My guess is your accessibility measure about accessible bus stops right now are on the three measures. And what happens in your estimate about the increase in the number of bus stops that are then defined as inaccessible? I think we need to know the order of magnitude of that. I also think it's important about when you bring the recommendation to the committee and then to the board, that it be not only an expectation that the board adopt a standard, this fourth element, but that we transmit it to TTB with a request that this become the region standard for everyone, and that will help us define this. The last point is that we've met several times with the AAC over the AAC's agenda. This is at the very top of the AAC's agenda, and we've talked with them about the need to have an annual reporting regularly every 12 months about progress on accessible bus stops. We've not done that in the past. We've done it as a special report, et cetera. But I think this warrants, and the AAC has said that they will be interested in volunteering about how to measure accessibility and how to measure the number of stops that are actually accessible. And I think it's important to take them up on that offer in this context, but in the context as well of having an accountability report every year. There's an old saying that if you don't count it, it doesn't count. And it's really important that this count for all of us.
Thank you, Mr. Downs. And I'll just conclude that whatever we do in terms of accessibility, we do in terms of improved ridership for the entire, the larger community. The opportunity to reach the entire community is our goal, and that really is, I think, the most important part here, that we recognize that improvements of bus stops means something to everyone. It just has a higher level of concern when one is has a disability and needs that. So I think we're on the right track no matter which way we go here. If there are no other questions or discussions, thank you very much. And as we move through the agenda, we will continue this discussion. And I think our next April agenda includes the electronic payment system as well on the same agenda item. Okay, if that is it, we're adjourned for this time.